This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm Kim Johnson in for David Martin Davies. Summer in Texas is always a scorcher, but if you've been feeling like it's hotter than usual, you're right. Heat records are being set around the world. It reached 124 degrees Fahrenheit in Algeria, an all-time record for both the country and the entire African continent. Los Angeles set an all-time record at 111 degrees. Japan logged its hottest temperature ever amid a heat wave. And across Texas, temperatures continue to top 100 degrees. San Antonio residents are no stranger to high temperatures and humidity during the summer, but we're seeing more triple-digit days than ever before, and according to climate models, it's going to get worse. We're talking about extreme heat today on The Source, and we want to hear from you. How is heat affecting your daily life? What do you do to beat the heat? What do you want to know about how to protect yourself and your loved ones as San Antonio summers get hotter? Call 210-614-8980. You can email The Source at tpr.org, or you can tweet at us at tprsource. We're going to kick things off today with Brendan Gibbons. He's an environment and energy reporter for the Rivard Report. The headline of his most recent article published over the weekend is "Climate Change Will Make San Antonio Even Hotter Over Coming Decades." Welcome to The Source, Brendan.
Great to be here, Kim. Thanks.
So before we get into how to deal with increasingly hot summers, let's talk briefly about why this is happening. As mentioned in your article, an overwhelming majority of climate scientists agree that this rapid rate of warming is due to greenhouse gas emissions from the burning of fossil fuels. So is Earth's average temperature rising anyway, and humans are compounding the problem, or is this entirely a man-made situation?
Scientists look at the entire period of record that they can find for both temperatures on Earth, but also the makeup of the atmosphere. And we've had times in Earth's history when we've been hotter than now, and times where there's been more concentrations of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. But what concerns them is about the rapid rate of warming happening right now. So it's getting a lot hotter than they would expect to, a lot faster. And when they look at all the possible causes for that, really what the vast majority of climate scientists settle on is that it's due to the increased greenhouse gases in the air from human burning of fossil fuels. That coupled with deforestation too, because when you do things like cut down massive parts of the rainforest, it takes away the ability to remove greenhouse gases from the atmosphere through trees.
Okay. And are these record-breaking temperatures that we've been seeing around the world, including in Texas, are these in line with what climate scientists expected to see over time as a result of climate change?
They have predicted the warming for many years, and they've observed it as well. And that same is true in San Antonio. What's great about temperature records is you can actually go and see this data yourself. That's what I did for some reporting I've done for both the Rivard Report and San Antonio Express News. I'll go and download the temperature data for San Antonio, and what you find when you look at our temperature records go back to the 1880s, and when you look at how they've been rising over the years, you'll see like an average temperature rise of 2.4 degrees Fahrenheit from the 1880s to now. So when you're looking at all temperatures averaged together, it's getting hotter and hotter.
And how does that compare to the rest of the world?
This warming trend is being observed pretty around the world. And, you just mentioned some of the places that are setting records right now. Now, no one individual heat wave or hot day or, triple digit day can be in itself attributed to climate change. Weather is still, a phenomenon that's controlled by all sorts of different things. But what the climate scientists are saying is they expect to have more of those extreme heat waves as the future unfolds.
So in your reporting for the Rivard Report and the Express News, you spoke with multiple researchers about their predictive modeling for weather. Can you tell me what is a predictive model?
These are models that run simulations of future weather conditions over a long period of time for a certain geographical area. There's a lot of different kinds of models. They focus on different things. They weigh different factors into consideration. So what I was my most recent story, a UTSA professor named Hatim Sharif looked at the outputs, the data from 21 of these different climate models, and he averaged them together to kind of control for as much variability as possible. He predicts a continued rise in average temperatures, and in fact, a separate but very similar climate study that was done last year predicted an average temperature rise between 4 and 8 degrees. And I typically phrase that in 100-degree days because that's, I think, how we feel the heat here. So this UTSA professor, Dr. Sharif, his modeling predicted a range of between 55 and 100 days per year over 100 degrees. with 120 to 125 days, four solid months is like the upper bounds of, you know, what's maybe a worst case scenario. And again, those are based on averages of all models together. So, you know, more hot days is the takeaway message there.
So that's the worst case scenario. What's the best case scenario?
Best case scenario. So, you know, for some context, he looked at the period of 1971 to 2000 as sort of a baseline. Climate's usually measured in 30-year increments to give weather enough time to unfold over a long enough period to statistically make a difference. So there were 700-degree days average per year at that time. So, you know, so from 7 to 55. So 55 is really kind of the lower end of, you know, what you could expect. And that's a significant change from now. It's a lot.
What are we seeing now?
About 7 days per year on average.
Okay. And I do want to comment. So your article that we mentioned earlier, climate change will make San Antonio even hotter over coming decades. A reader did comment on that article saying that you might should have used the words could or might in the headline. Can you respond to that?
I think I feel confident enough we'll be hotter over the coming decades. The models are predicting that. We're observing. We're in a trend right now. Where we're observing that warming. And just for example, looking at days over 100 degrees, I looked at that data for that myself per decade. And so in the 1890s, you had 39 days over 100 degrees. In the 1900s, you had 55. 1910s, you had 73. Fast forward to the 1990s, 144 days in that decade over 100 degrees, 148 in the 2000s, and 174 into the 2010s. So a very strong confidence that it will be hotter. It's harder to say, for example, whether we're going to be a wetter or drier city. The models aren't as clear about results like that. So I wouldn't necessarily say climate change will make floods heavier in San Antonio.
But we can say pretty definitively that it will become hotter over the years. So you've reported extensively on the rising temperatures and how they're affecting multiple aspects of life. What are some of the things that stood out to you?
I think one of the things that we've seen this year is just increased demand for energy use. Our supplies, our power plants and our wind and solar capacities, and then also the ability to for utilities like CPS Energy to ask their customers to conserve voluntarily, they were enough to meet demand. So it's not like we were on the verge of blackouts or brownouts or anything like that. But we still did earlier this month set a record in San Antonio for energy demand on a high point in the late afternoon. Early evenings, people getting home from work, turning on their ACs. We used more electricity at one point than we've ever used before. And the same happened statewide across Texas just a week before that, or around a week before that.
So we are talking today about extreme heat on The Source, and we do want to hear from our callers. If you have something to tell us about, you know, how is extreme weather affecting your home or work life? For people who work outdoors, how are you dealing with the sweltering heat? I know that was part of your reporting as well about the outdoor labor force and how that could be affected. We can talk more about that after the break. Give us a call, 210-614-8980. Are you concerned with your utility bill? What have you done to try to keep costs low? How have summers in San Antonio changed over the years for you? Give us a call, 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm Kim Johnson. We'll be back after this one-minute break. Welcome back to The Source. I'm Kim Johnson, in for David Martin Davies. Last week, the San Antonio Metropolitan Health District issued an excessive heat warning, indicating a sustained heat index greater than or equal to 113 degrees Fahrenheit. Sustained exposure to this level of heat is very likely to cause sunstroke, heat cramps, heat exhaustion, but heat-related injuries and deaths are often preventable. So what do you need to know about preventing heat-related illnesses? What are the signs of heat exhaustion and heat stroke? What can you do to help someone with a heat-related injury? We're talking about extreme heat today on The Source, and we invite you into the conversation. Do you have a question, comment, or story to tell? Give us a call, 210-614-8980. And we are joined right now by Mario Martinez. He's the Assistant Director of the Environmental Health and Safety Division for the San Antonio Metropolitan Health Department. Thanks for being here, Mario.
Thank you.
And on the line, we have Jason Reyes, Media and Communications Lieutenant for the Texas Department of Public Safety for Region 6. Thanks, Jason, for being here today.
Thank you, Kim.
So let's talk about the health aspects of this. So what I understand is heat kills by pushing the human body beyond its limits. Mario, can you tell me exactly what is the risk of heat in terms of causing death?
Right. So in extreme heat, it really pushes our body's core system to kind of overload. And so in cases of extreme heat, a person can experience shock, organ failure, or even brain damage. And so that's at an extreme level. And so it's important for folks to know the initial warning signs of, you know, experiencing dizziness or weakness, and then to assess that immediately or have someone there that can help that individual.
And how do you know when it's serious enough to go to, say, a hospital or a minor emergency clinic?
Right. So in those cases, you would probably experience a high body temperature of maybe 103, 105 or higher, where skin looks and feels red, hot to the touch. Someone who is, you know, feeling weakness or passing out at that point, then the if there's a family member, a coworker, or someone there, they should immediately take action to call 911 or move the individual to a place where there's air conditioning, somewhere cool.
And so this progresses, right? So we go from something like dehydration maybe to then we go heat exhaustion and then heat stroke. Is that
right? So there are unique warning signs in different categories, but there are warning signs that are similar in all. For example, when you're looking at weakness, dizziness, or confusion, those are some similar warning signs across different categories. But then when you get to heat stroke, which is more severe, that's where you're feeling your body temperature really go up to 103 plus and then feeling like you're going to pass out.
And who is more likely to succumb to extreme heat?
So risk groups like infants, young children, the elderly, people who are ill or have chronic disease such as heart disease or high blood pressure are individuals at extreme level of risk during these hot days.
And so what I understand is there haven't been any heat-related deaths in Bexar County this year.
Correct.
So, but there have been crews that have responded to cases of heat exhaustion.
Correct.
And those number, what are we talking?
So our last report, which is of July the 29th, we're showing about 176 cases of heat exhaustion that have been reported to hospitals. And then we use that data to kind of track on the weekly basis. And that's really the most common type of exposure that we're seeing in our community.
Okay. And are these cases increasing, or is this about on par for a normal summer in San Antonio?
On par with normal summer and heats. There's been other summers where we have higher temperatures, but definitely it's always about, you know, getting the word out late spring into the early summer about the dangers of heat during the summer.
I wanted to go to you, Jason. He is the Media and Communications Lieutenant for the Texas Department of Public Safety for Region 6. And I wanted to talk to you about hot car deaths. Can you tell me a little bit about the risk and, you know, what is this? How does this happen?
So, and I'm glad you brought today's topic up. Today is actually National Heat Stroke Prevention Day. So already this year, we've had lost 29 children who have died from heat stroke inside of vehicles. So this is actually putting us on track to be one of the deadliest years for hot car deaths. So today's awareness, National Heat Stroke Prevention Day, is dedicated to bringing awareness to the predictable and preventable tragedies of children and animals dying in hot cars.
So what kind of heat are we talking about? Like, how hot does it get inside a car in the summer?
You know, NHTSA tells us that temperature can rise inside of a car up to 20 degrees in just 10 minutes alone. And that's even with an outside temperature of 60 degrees. So it just takes a matter of minutes for that heat inside of a vehicle to raise.
And what if I say roll the windows down or park in the shade? Does that help at all?
Rolling the windows down is not going to help you. The studies are telling us that temperature inside the vehicle is just going to just rise by leaps and bounds.
And so, Mario, I read that children are more susceptible to heat stroke than adults. Why is that?
Yeah, it's just, you know, they're very young, and so their bodies are just developing. And so the heat, it's just, like I mentioned earlier, it really overloads the body. And at their age, and even for elderly folks, it really does that really quickly. And so it's just something for friends and family and coworkers to be aware of, you know, the heat and watching out for our little ones and our seniors.
What about, I mean, could I just leave a kid in the car just for a few minutes, like run in and out of a store?
Never.
Or
Never
leave a kid or a pet alone in the car. So even if the child is saved, say, that heat, the period of time that they were in the car in the heat could cause significant damage that's long-lasting. Is that correct?
Correct. Organ failure, brain damage, death, very severe, just for a few minutes of exposure in the car.
And Jason, do you have any tips? How can these things, you wonder, like, how can this even happen? Like, how could a parent, say, forget a child in the car? But it does happen. Do y'all have any suggestions to parents just to make 100% sure that this doesn't happen to you and your family?
Well, Kim, no one thinks that a hot car tragedy can happen to them or their family, and this is exactly why these tragedies continue to happen. So what DPS recommends is that you never, never leave a child unattended inside of a vehicle. And if you do see a child, call 911 immediately and have an emergency response come to your location. Teach children not to play inside of vehicles. Make sure you place the keys out of reach where they cannot be used. Always check your back seats and the cargo areas of the vehicle before walking away from it. Establish some type of reminder to ensure that you remove the children from the vehicle. For example, leave your purse, your bag, your lunch, or your cell phone back there. I've even heard of a lady who would take off one of her shoes and she would put the other shoe back there as a reminder. And if a child does go missing in your area, open all the doors and trunks to every vehicle in the area because many heat stroke deaths occur when a child accesses a parked car.
Are there good Samaritan laws in Texas that would allow, say, like a passerby to break a window and save a child if they see a kid in a hot car?
So if a person should get involved, they are exempt from the liability and the law when it comes to because of the good Samaritan law.
But ideally, you would want to call 911 and let a police officer do that?
Ideally, you would want to call 911, but in worst-case scenario, if a person needs to take action, then we encourage you to take that action. There are many tools that are out there right now on the market. One in particular is a Rescue Me tool where it'll break a window, cut a seatbelt off. But if you feel that that incident is in dire need, definitely take immediate action.
Well, I'm going to go to a caller, and if you want to join our conversation today, the number is 210-614-8980. This is John. John, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I have a complaint about, in general, we have news reports about symptoms of problems, but not underlying causes. We emit so much carbon into the air because there's no fee charged to industries that extract carbon that will dampen our demand for carbon. We're going to make the price of things go up, so share the fee proceeds to all people, and that makes sure that we'll know the policy is not going to harm those who are least well off.
So we're saying here that, thanks for your call, John, by the way, that environmental health and I guess our health in general could improve with better energy policies. Do you want to respond to that, Brendan?
Yeah, I think the caller was interested in solutions too, and he's right that there's not really any attempts to deal with this problem on a federal or state level, but locally there is. There's a San Antonio Climate Action Plan underway right now, where the city, CPS Energy, our municipal utility, the University of Texas at San Antonio, and a consultant, Navigant, that's working on behalf of CPS. And then around 90 local volunteers from a huge diversity of groups, and they're all getting together. And the climate modeling report I just cited was funded by this effort to get more precise data to work with. They're all trying to find out what the solutions are going to be at our level here in San Antonio. And you know, listeners can get involved with that too and attend those meetings.
How long has that effort been underway?
It's been the official kickoff was December last year. It all started when the new city council last summer agreed to try to stay within the bounds of an international agreement called the Paris Accord, to do San Antonio's little part to meet those goals of that organization. And so they've been meeting regularly, and they expect to produce a report by early next year.
Okay. I do want to invite callers into the conversation. We want to know, how is extreme weather, the heat specifically, affecting your home or work life? Like, what are you doing to stay cool, to beat the heat? And what do you remember about summer in San Antonio that's different now because of the heat? Give us a call, 210-614-8980. I do want to go to you again, Brendan. I read that heat can affect you more depending on whether you live in an urban or rural area. Why is that?
A lot of that, I think, is because of the urban heat island effect. I haven't looked at this precisely, but there are some researchers in San Antonio studying this. Different parts of the city, depending on the amount of just asphalt pavement, it'll be reflecting heat back up at you. One thing that San Antonio does have is a tree ordinance that preserves trees or replaces trees that are cut down with tree canopy elsewhere. And so that's meant to combat the urban heat island effect, plus kind of beautify everything.
Okay. And Mario, I also have a note here that in terms of people that are more susceptible to heat, we have overweight people. And we know we have a problem here in San Antonio with diabetes and obesity. Why is it that people that are overweight are more vulnerable to the heat?
So when we look at, you know, people with chronic disease, it's already affecting their bodies. And when you add a layer of excessive heat to that, again, it pushes that overload into a higher mode, which then, again, you're going to start seeing some initial signs of, you know, the weakness, the heat exhaustion, dehydration, and can lead to more severe organ failure. So it really goes back to, again, just the chronic disease element of, you know, some of the citizens in our community.
So that would also include people, say, with high blood pressure.
Definitely, yes.
Heart disease,
right.
Need to be more careful.
Very careful with that.
I want to talk to Jason real quick. So if you're, say you have to be in the heat, you're going to be outside for maybe an extended period of time. What are some things that you can do to prepare yourself and your family members to, you know, to deal with that?
Well, if you're going to be outside for a long period of time, you know, we encourage you to drink plenty of water throughout the day. Even if you're not feeling thirsty, it's really important to hydrate. Pay attention to your body heat, and then check on others, especially the elderly, the sick. And don't forget about pets. I can't emphasize that enough. And then just monitor local weather updates, and then wearing light-colored clothing, using sunscreen, and just being careful during outdoor activities.
To just monitor everybody, check in with everybody every so often, make sure they're still doing okay, sort of thing?
That's exactly right.
So you did want to talk about pets. Let's do that. So not just hot car deaths for pets is something we have to worry about, but just in general, being outside in the yard. Talk about how you should protect your pets from extreme heat during the summer.
As the same as the human body, the heat exhaustion for pets will be the same. Obviously, you want to make sure that there's a shaded area for them, make sure that they have plenty of water that they can drink, and if at all possible, to bring them indoors where they can cool off as well. Obviously, being left inside the vehicle, they will have the same issues inside of inside that vehicle. That temperature rises, and again, if left alone, obviously they could succumb to death as well.
So we are talking about extreme heat today on The Source, and we do want to hear from you. Do you happen to work outside? Do you spend a lot of time outside normally, or have you changed your patterns of what you do in the summer normally because of the heat? What have you had to do to keep cool? Are you concerned about your utility bill, and what have you done to try to keep costs low? We're going to come back from the break and talk with someone from CPS Energy about the energy demand that they've been receiving in response to the heat in San Antonio. Give us a call, 210-614-8980. That's 210-614-8980. Join the conversation on The Source. We'll be back in 2 minutes. Welcome back to The Source. I'm Kim Johnson, in for David Martin Davies. CPS Energy said electricity demand reached an all-time high last week. And here to talk about how San Antonio's municipally owned energy utility is meeting customer demand and best practices for energy conservation is Nora Castro, spokesperson for CPS Energy. And if you want to join the conversation about San Antonio's summer heat wave, give us a call, 210-614-8980. Welcome to The Source, Nora.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So tell me about the energy demand this summer compared to previous years.
You know, we are seeing record temperatures in San Antonio and across the state of Texas. In the past 30 days, the temperatures have been above average for the past, for 25 out of the 30 days. So that if that gives you any indication of how the summer started and kind of what we're anticipating for the rest of the summer.
And was CPS ready for this heat wave?
Absolutely. You know, we started early, number one, communicating with our customers for preparing for these temperatures. You know, we actually do that year round, making sure that our equipment is operating, but also that our customers are informed.
And what is CPS doing? I mean, as we're hearing that it's going to continue to get hotter in San Antonio, what are you doing to prepare for these increasingly hotter summers?
You know, conservation is the key, you know, to meeting demand. So, you know, we are communicating with our customers, making sure that they are aware of how these high temperatures not only, you know, affect, you know, our city, but the state, but also how they affect their, you know, their energy bill. So we're definitely communicating with our customers, you know, making sure that they are aware of some, you know, of our simple energy saving tips and how conservation, you know, is the key.
So even with this heat wave, though, we haven't seen any blackouts or brownouts, which is something that can happen when there's not enough power on the grid to meet demand. Even though we haven't had these blackouts or brownouts, is the system strained at all?
You know, during the summer, you know, the system, you know, does see strain, but I can tell you that CPS Energy has enough capacity to meet our customers' demand. But what residents can do is actually conserve energy so that we can make sure that the whole state of Texas has energy.
And is increased demand always a concern for the grid, or is it stable enough to continue operating without issue regardless of demand?
You know, we see an increase in demand in the summer and during the winter time. During the summer, we see it because of air conditioners. You know, we see an increase of air conditioners during the summer, but also during the time period of 3 to 7 p.m., we see high energy during this time because, you know, people are coming home from work, they bump down their thermostat, they start, you know, making dinner, the kids get home. So we see increase during that time. And that is the time that we ask our customers to try to minimize some of those high energy tasks. So if they have, you know, plans to do a load of laundry or to make dinner, you know, if they can push it back a little later, past that 7 p.m. time frame, that will help not only their energy bill, but also make sure that, you know, the grid is not stressed. You know, if we all have a part and can do everything that we do can help the grid.
As you mentioned earlier, not everyone can afford to keep their AC running all the time. Not everybody has reliable access to AC. So when temperatures climb, vulnerable populations tend to be most at risk. What is CPS doing to ensure affordable energy for residents that have challenges paying their utility bills?
You know, we have a number of programs that can help customers, whether it be paying their energy bill. You know, we have different payment plans, but we also have programs for customers that qualify that can help them, you know, expand those bills, you know, month by month, or can qualify them for some of our programs, like our Casa Verde program that helps weatherize homes here in San Antonio. We also work with a lot of partner agencies here in San Antonio. So if there's something that we can't help the customer with, we definitely want to be a resource to our customers and point them towards the right direction. There's a lot of things that customers can do to stay cool during the summer. Number one, you know, ceiling fans or fans, you know, if customers have those in their home, it can definitely help them feel cool during the summer. Another thing we offer free thermostats for our customers, programmable thermostats. So if they're not going to be home, you know, it gives them an opportunity to conserve energy and not just cool an empty house. You know, they could set the thermostat to a higher temperature when they're not home so that the house isn't just being cooled. And then when they come back home, you know, they come back on to make sure that the house is cool when they return. So there's a lot of resources and tools that we offer our customers.
Do y'all encourage things like proper insulation or window reflectors, that sort of thing, in terms of staying cool without breaking the bank?
Absolutely. You know, even before summertime comes around and even, you know, before winter, we ask for customers to make sure that their HVAC system is operating efficiently. You know, the HVAC system or heating and air conditioning is the biggest, you know, cost in terms of their electric bill. So we want to make sure that those HVAC systems are working efficiently. We ask our customers to work with a licensed professional. And then we also ask our customers to make sure that their home is weatherized properly, make sure that there's not any cracks or holes where that cold air or warm air is seeping out of, you know, those holes. Additionally, you know, we provide lots of tips and tools on our website. We have a really cool tool called the Minergy Portal, which is on our website. And customers with a smart meter can actually go in there and look at their energy consumption in 15-minute increments. So this is very beneficial for customers that are on a tight budget, especially with this, you know, these high temperatures. So if they're halfway through the month and they go in there and notice that, hey, energy consumption has been really high, that gives them time to, you know, take some of these tips and use them so that they can be on track for their budget.
I appreciate you joining us today. This is Nora Castro, spokesperson for CPS Energy. Have a great day, Nora. We are going to go to another caller now. This is Josh. Josh, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, how are you?
Good, how are you? Go ahead.
Hey, good. Well, I teach tennis outside for a living, and I'm always out, you know, on the court, and I'm always having to make people aware of the necessity of making sure that they're drinking enough water. But a lot of people just don't know really how much water that is, you know, and people say, well, what is the right amount of water? And it really depends, I think. You know, if you're actively outside, especially on a tennis court, or if you're outside in the pavement, you know, or you're getting that radiant heat, you're going to need at least like 60 fluid ounces or more of water so that your body can probably, you know, cool itself, you know. But I do think that you acclimate. So a lot of people like saying, oh, don't go outside, don't go outside. But if you slowly go outside and you are drinking enough water, you'll be fine. But it's just a matter of how much time you spend.
Thank you so much, Josh. I appreciate your call. So let's talk about that. Mario Martinez with the San Antonio Metropolitan Health Department. Do people's bodies acclimate to heat?
It does, but again, you're going to feel the effects of just prolonged exposure to heat. And so during the summer, people should be drinking more water than usual. And don't wait until you're thirsty. So that's sort of kind of the tip, is to make sure that you're keeping the hydration up. And also making sure that you take breaks out of the exposure of, you know, high heat, and finding an area where there's air conditioning. That's important.
And water specifically, right? So I read that some of the sports drinks, right? You think that it's healthy because it's a sports drink, but it's got a lot of sugar, and that can negatively impact.
Right. So water is definitely the first choice for staying hydrated. Some folks will, you know, use sports drinks, but really water is the best for folks to use when they're outside working, doing their daily activities, and also avoiding drinks with caffeine, avoiding alcohol. That's important as well. So just really sticking to water.
Those things just make you get more dehydrated quicker,
yes,
sort of thing? Okay. Let's go to another call. This is Jamie. Jamie, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to reiterate what the other fellows were saying. I'm a plumber, and I'm out in the heat every day, all day. And I think you have to take water with you so that you don't have to go somewhere to drink it. Bring some shade with you, because there could be a 30-degree temperature spring between the heat and the shade. And hydrate before, during, and after your project so that when you're not losing water, you can build up the hydration that you need before you go out in the sun.
Thanks, Jamie, for that call. Let's Brendan, wanted to respond to that.
Yeah, I'm really glad that he pointed that out. I looked at numbers last summer from the Texas Workforce Commission. There's almost 64,000 people in San Antonio who make their living outside in construction jobs mostly. And I went out with a crew of roofers on a very hot triple-digit day last summer, and it was interesting to see them using the techniques that Jamie is talking about, of being completely covered head to toe with shade and sunglasses, gloves, everything, and then taking frequent, you know, every 10, 15 minutes or so at least, water breaks. And so, you know, these are the people that are feeling the heat the most. They're coping with it. But some scientists are predicting that as it continues to get hotter, we'll see a decline in productivity because it just gets so hard to look at or to work outdoors like that. And so they're predicting, according to one report, almost a 10% annual reduction in county gross GDP by the end of the century compared to 2012.
Because of that lack of the outdoor workforce.
A variety of factors, but that's the main one, is like the lack of outdoor workforce.
That's really interesting. Let's hear from one more person before we go to break. This is Mike. Mike, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hello. I'm a commercial flat roofer. I've been doing this for 14 years now. And there was a close call with actually one of my good friends. We were working out with a company from Michigan, went down to Florida, and just the jump in temperature and humidity was more than we were acclimated to. So we kept drinking like the same amount of water, same routine, but the extra that we needed, we weren't, or at least he wasn't. And he ended up getting heat stroke and spent 2 days in the hospital with IV drip, rehydrating, and yeah.
Well, Mike, that is a story. It's a perfect example of why you have to take precautions in the heat. We're talking about extreme heat today on The Source. We want to hear from you. Give us a call, 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. We have one more segment after this break. Stay tuned. Welcome back to The Source. I'm Kim Johnson, in for David Martin Davies. Extreme heat is defined as a long period of high heat and humidity with temperatures above 90 degrees, and this can often result in the highest number of annual deaths among all weather-related hazards. As you've probably noticed, summers in San Antonio are getting hotter, and we're talking about how to deal with extreme heat today on The Source. We want to hear from you. You still have time. Give us a call, 210-614-8980. Parents, is the heat spoiling some of the summer fun for your kids? Pet owners, what are you doing to watch out for your pets? Have you had to make adjustments to your home this summer because of the heat? Give us a call, 210-614-8980. And I want to go back to Jason Reyes. He is with the Department of Public Safety for Region 6. I pulled some information from y'all's website, and one of the things that it suggests to prepare for extreme heat, it says you should get trained in first aid to learn how to treat heat-related emergencies. Is that something you think everyone should know how to do?
We encourage, if possible, we encourage you to do so, because you never know when it's going to be a life or death situation. It may not be this heat-related incident, but it may be a traffic crash or something that you come across one day. So we encourage you to do so.
And how would someone go about learning how to treat heat-related emergencies on their own?
Well, again, we want to leave it to the experts. If at all possible, you want to contact 911, your emergency officials, right away, so that they who are the most trained can arrive on scene. But if necessary, what we encourage you to do is take some courses, whether it be CPR courses, things of that nature, so that you can administer that first aid.
And Mario, one thing that surprised me when I was looking at different heat-related illnesses is for heat stroke, it says do not give the person anything to drink. Can you tell me why is that?
Well, I mean, you really have to kind of know what's going on. And an individual who's, trying to help someone doesn't really know if that's, hydration or heat stroke or something else. So really that needs to be identified by a medical professional. So that's why it's important to initially know what the signs are, confusion or someone who's passing out, call 911, move the individual to a place where it's cooler, apply clothing or towels that are wet on the body to help, and then the folks from EMS will then determine what needs to be done at that point, because an individual who's really trying to help doesn't know exactly what is happening with that individual.
Interesting. So let's get another caller on the air. This is Kelly. Kelly, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, I was calling because I actually had a question for Nora, but I was wondering about, businesses in the heat of the summer, because people go in and they're so cold that they end up wearing blankets and sweatsuits and sometimes even plugging in little electric heaters just to stay warm in their offices all day, which pushes up the electrical use. Is there anything that is being done with businesses to help deal with that so there isn't as much electrical use and people aren't as cold as at work?
Thanks, Kelly, for that call. Brendan?
I think that's a great question. I'm not aware of anything locally to address that issue, but I can tell you that when some recent data that I reported on just tried to get an idea of where all of our big fossil fuel emissions, where they're coming from, what's causing that. And half of it is from energy use in our buildings. And I think that's primarily driven by air conditioning use. So, half of all of our greenhouse gas emissions to the atmosphere in San Antonio come from like heating and cooling. So any way that we could make those buildings more efficient in their use of power will certainly help cut our emissions, and it probably would make life a lot more comfortable for a lot of people, because we've all been in buildings where the AC is cranked up too high and it's just not comfortable.
Is there any part of the, is there any initiative or part of the climate action plan that's designed to specifically to reach out to businesses to talk to them about their energy use? Do you have any idea if that's part of it?
That's part of the business community is part of the volunteers that are working on this plan. And CPS also does have a lot of rebate programs for businesses and residential customers who want to improve their energy efficiency in their homes or businesses. So, if you reach out to them, they can probably help you find specific programs that they have that might work for you.
Interesting. Let's get another caller on the air. This is Alyssa. Alyssa, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. I'd just like to say how lucky we are in San Antonio to have all the wonderful swimming pools, but I understand that they're not open from daylight to dusk, and I think maybe that's a resource that we're neglecting. We've asked at my local pool, we can go early 3 mornings a week, but we've asked to extend that time and been told there's not enough money. But I think maybe that's a mistaken decision. So I'd just like to put that out there. The swimming pools, if they could be open from 7:30 till 8 o'clock at night, a whole lot of people could take advantage of that.
Thank you so much, Alyssa. That's a really good point. And I, in addition to swimming pools, I know that people are encouraged to utilize public spaces that have AC, like libraries, that sort of thing. Is that correct, Brendan?
That is true. And I think Metro Health has designated cooling centers that can serve for those things. I do think that, you know, unfortunately, San Antonio's river and its urban streams, they're too polluted to be able to swim in right now. But they're not, the pollution that's in them is not something that couldn't be fixed. And so, you know, imagine what it would be like to have a place where we could all swim in urban areas, like all in a natural creek or river all the time. And I think that's the kind of thing that would be really, you know, might help to, you know, deal with some of these extreme heat problems.
Mario, talk a little bit more about these cooling centers that Brendan mentioned.
Right. So this is a partnership between MetroHealth and other city departments. So senior centers, public libraries, community centers through Parks and Recreation are all kind of identified as cooling centers where folks can go and cool off and be in an air-conditioned building. So right now in level one, so each of those locations are looking at demand from the community as far as opening later. And so those locations are kind of working with the community to find out what their hours will be on the day-to-day.
Where can people find a map or a list of these cooling centers around town?
Folks can call the city at 311. But there's also a interactive map with those cooling centers that folks can visit at saoemprepare.com. And you can kind of, you know, look at the map, you know, find a location, get the address and the hours of operation.
And there was also, I feel like I saw something with VIA. You can like plan your route to get to one of these cooling centers as well.
Correct.
And while we're on the subject of other resources, there is a Project Cool is a fan program. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Correct. So that's a partnership with the city, United Way, Catholic Charities. So this is a program that's made for seniors 68 years of age or older who have a critical need for a box fan. And so these box fans are donated. And so when folks call 211, they'll kind of direct them on starting the process. And then depending on donations, then a fan will be available.
And if somebody wanted to donate a fan to the project, how would they do that?
Right. Same thing. So they would call 211 to find out how they could do that.
Okay. So MetroHealth has a Beat the Heat campaign. And is this something that's new in light of the increasingly hotter summers, or has this been something that y'all have been working on for a while?
Yeah, it's a campaign we've been working for a while just to really get the education about the dangers and precautions of excessive heat. This is something we're working with our Office of Emergency Management.
And Jason Reyes with the Department of Public Safety for the state. Does the state, does your department have an education or outreach campaign to get people in the know about all this stuff related to heat?
Well, we also want to, the summertime is probably one of the busiest times in our driver's license office. And so what we encourage people to do is actually you can do, take advantage of our online services. Most 60% of the transactions that take place actually can be done online. So rather than standing in one of our lines or having to stand outside in the heat, we encourage you to take advantage of the online services.
That is very smart. Let's get another caller on the air. This is Deborah. Deborah, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, Deborah. Hi, thanks for taking my call. One thing that y'all haven't discussed is individuals who do not perspire. I happen to be one of those, and water consumption really doesn't help. And I'm just thinking adults know this, who have this condition, but it could pose a real threat to children, and that parents need to be aware of that in their child, that perhaps they have a child that doesn't perspire, like kids normally do when they run and so forth. Maybe talk about those symptoms so that to give parents some insight.
Thank you, Deborah. Mario, have you heard of something like this?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, I think when we look at, you know, some of the initial signs, dizziness, weakness, increased heart rate, these are all kind of initial signs that something's not right. And so parents, family, coworkers, again, should be on the lookout to make sure that they're identifying those initial signs and take action.
So when you are suffering from, maybe it's coming on, what are the first few things you should look for? You mentioned dizziness.
Right. A person could be confused, weakness, you know, wanting to sit down or just, you know, just not looking like they're, you know, performing their activity outside if that's what's happening. And just being aware of those initial signs is really critical. And then moving an individual to a place where it's a lot cooler and just kind of providing some hydration or even some towels with some kind of wetness on it to really cool off the individual.
Great. That was Mario Martinez. He is the Assistant Director of the Environmental Health and Safety Division for the San Antonio Metropolitan Health Department. Jason Reyes with the Texas Department of Public Safety. What's your one big takeaway for staying safe during extreme heat in Texas?
Well, I just want to emphasize children are needlessly dying every year because they are left unattended in vehicles. So let's all do our part to prevent these injuries and deaths.
Absolutely. And Brendan, if somebody's going to walk away from today's show with a single piece of advice for how to deal with this or, you know, what to think about when we think about heat, what would it be?
San Antonio, just like a lot of parts of the world, is getting warmer. We're going to be dealing with these more extremely hot days. And there are some solutions going on locally to try and find a way to deal with it as best as possible.
And a lot of resources. Yeah, I want to thank everybody for being a part of this conversation today. Brendan Gibbons, environment and energy reporter for the Rivard Report, Mario Martinez and Jason Reyes. Also, Nora Castro with CPS Energy was with us earlier. I'm Kim Johnson in for David Martin Davies. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.